Good evening. It's good to see you here this evening. We have a good crowd this evening. Appreciate that fact. And isn't the weather nice that allows us to do that? If you, and I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but if you wonder if you're old or not, if you knew that song, you're old. You can just accept that. I was surprised. I mentioned it to Carrie this morning that it would go along with what we're going to be studying tonight. He asked if there were any songs that I thought of. And this one came readily to mind. And I was thinking, well, you know, surely everybody knows that. I mean, everybody knows that. And he told me after services, that song's not in the book. And evidently wasn't in any of the slide programs that we have at all. So I don't know how long it's been since I would have sung that song. I would have said maybe 6 months, but now I'm thinking maybe 16 years kind of a thing. But I enjoyed singing it. I hope that you did as well. We're going to talk about things along that line tonight. We're going to start out in the book of Jonah. We're not going to study the book of Jonah tonight. When I finish up in Romans here in several weeks on the Wednesday night study, we're going to do a real quick study of the 12 minor prophets. And so later in the year, we'll be studying the book of Jonah. And so we're not going to delve deeply into Jonah tonight, but there is something that is included in the first three verses of the book of Jonah that I want us to consider tonight. The book of Jonah starts out with these words. Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, "Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and cry out against it, for their wickedness has come up before me." But Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. He went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare and went down into it to go with them to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. I think all of us are aware of the big story in the book of Jonah, how that Jonah was swallowed by a great fish and later on expelled from that fish on to dry land. What sometimes we don't know is the rest of the story. What got Jonah in the great fish's belly to start with? And the answer to that is that Jonah shirked a responsibility that God gave to him. And the way that he began shirking that responsibility was in his mind to run away from God. God told him to do something that he did not want to do. God said, "You go to Nineveh and you preach to that great city." And instead of going to Nineveh, which was in the west, he decided to go to Tarshish, which was in the east. He went the exact opposite direction from what the Lord told him to go. And he was not only running from Nineveh, but he was running from God as well and the responsibility that God had given to him. And I got to thinking about that and I thought, you know, there are a lot of ways that people think that they can run away, either running away from God or running away from responsibilities. Jonah is certainly not the only person who has considered what his responsibility is and run the opposite direction from it. And so tonight we're going to use that thought in these first three verses to talk about some things, not necessarily attached to the book of Jonah, but just some things that we need to consider that despite our best efforts to do so, we just cannot run away from these things. And the first thing that I want to suggest to you that we cannot run away from is the presence of the Lord. There are a lot of people who I think have misconception about that. They have the idea that in some way they can escape the presence of the Lord. And that's not just a modern thought. That is a thought that has been true nearly from the beginning of man's existence when Adam and Eve went and hid themselves, at least they thought, from God because of the sin that they had committed. And so it's an age-old story of man not being what man is supposed to be and doing the things that God has told them, they know that God has told them to do, and thinking that in some way they can escape the Lord by running away from the presence of the Lord. I want you to go to Psalm 139. In Psalm 139, that's a psalm that David wrote as an encouragement to people. And I want to read verses 7 through 10. But the point that David is making in this passage is that God is always there. God is always present with man. That man cannot find himself in a situation where God's presence is not there. Psalm chapter 139, beginning at verse 7, says, "Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend into heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in hell," that is Sheol, the grave, "behold, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall lay hold of me." Let's go ahead and read verses 11 and 12 along with it. "If I say, surely the darkness shall fall on me, even the night shall be light about me. Indeed, the darkness shall not hide from you, but the night shines as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to you." And so here's the comfort that David gives to those who read this psalm. It is that God is always with you. That there is nowhere that you can find yourself that God is not there. And that's a comforting thing for the righteous, is it not? To know that there is no situation we can find ourselves in that God is not there and watching over us, that all-seeing eye watching over us. Isn't that comforting to know that there's no situation that we can find ourselves in, no dark place in our lives that we descend into, but that God is not there with us? There's no region of the world that we can go to. We may find ourselves in a place where we are alone, but in fact, what David is saying, even when you seem the most alone, know that you're not alone because God is there. God sees and God knows you. Isn't that a comforting thing if you're righteous before God to know that there's no situation in life, no place on this earth that you go that God won't be there with you? That's an encouragement to the faithful. But go over to Jeremiah chapter 23. In Jeremiah chapter 23, we find the same kind of concept, but it's not an encouragement to the faithful, it's a warning to the unfaithful. Jeremiah chapter 23 is a passage that is warning the priests and the prophets of Israel, who in Jeremiah's day are not being what they ought to be. They are prophesying falsehood. The priests are not leading the people in righteousness. They're leading them in unrighteousness. And so there is a message here about the all-seeing eye of God. And it is that you can't escape the presence of God. Jeremiah chapter 23, beginning at verse 23. "Am I a God near at hand, says the Lord, and not a God afar off? Can anyone hide himself in secret places so I shall not see him, says the Lord? Do I not fill heaven and earth, says the Lord?" Here's his message to those people, whether it's the priest or the prophet or someone who is following the example of the priest or following the words of the false prophet, here's the message. You need to know that whatever it is you are doing, whatever it is you are saying, wherever it is that you are going in your unrighteousness, God sees and God knows. There is no secret place where God is not there. I don't know what Jonah was thinking as he decided instead of taking a boat to Nineveh, he would take a boat to Tarshish. I don't know if he had this concept of God as the God of Israel alone, and that you couldn't get God out of Israel. But if he had that kind of idea that God didn't go as far as Tarshish, he needed a new thought. Because not only would God be there in Tarshish, but God would be all along that route as he got further and further and further away from the responsibility that God gave to him. God was there. Tarshish was not a secret place away from God, because there is no secret place that is away from God. Can anyone hide in secret places? And the answer is understood to be no. No one can hide from God. And so the passage that that Carey referred to earlier on, Hebrews 4 and verse 13, no creature is hidden from his sight. I want you to go to Acts chapter 17, where the apostle Paul is in the city of Athens, and he is brought to the Areopagus in order to speak to the people, and his sermon that day is the one true God. I'm going to tell you about the true God. They had all of these false gods in Athens, but he says, I want to tell you about the God, the one God who is the true God. He says, about halfway through verse 23, therefore the one whom you worship without knowing, him I proclaim to you, God who made the world and everything in it, since he is the Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands, nor is he worshipped with men's hands, as though he needed anything, since he gives to all life, breath, and all things. You can't box God, is what Paul is saying here in this passage. And perhaps it is that Jonah thought of God as the God of the temple. You know, he's in that four walls of that temple. So I can run from the temple, and the further I get from Jerusalem, further I get from Mount Zion, the further I get from that temple mount, the further I am from God. And what Paul says is to these people who saw their gods kind of in that same way that Apollos dwelt in Apollos' temple, and Aphrodite dwelt in Aphrodite's temple, and so on and so forth. That thought was an improper thought about the one true God, because the one true God doesn't dwell in a temple. You can't box him in. He is the God who dwells through all of heaven and earth. And in verse 26, he says, he has made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on all the face of the earth, and has determined their pre-appointed times and the boundaries of their dwellings. You can't put God in a box, but God can, he can limit where you are and where you go in this life. We have an unlimited God who sets limits, is what he says about us. Now notice there in verse 27 why he set these boundaries and limits. So that they, that is people in the world, Jew and Gentile, they might seek the Lord in the hope that they might grope for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. What Paul says is your responsibility is not to run from God, but it is to run to God. To try to the best of your ability to be as close to this God as you possibly can be. And so we need to understand that about ourselves and about God, that we cannot run away from the presence of God. There's a second thing, though, that we cannot run away from. We cannot run away from our own selves. Go over to Galatians chapter 6. I think that's the point that the Apostle Paul is making here in this passage. Galatians chapter 6, beginning at verse 4, says, "But let each one examine his own work, and then he will have rejoicing in himself alone, and not in another." He says, keep your mind on your things, on your responsibilities. And don't be spending your time looking out for somebody else and we're all worried about what they're doing. Worry primarily about what you're doing and what your relationship is with God. And then in verse 5, "For each one shall bear his own load." Each of us, Paul says, has a load to bear, and that load is the responsibility that God has given to us. We have different loads. There are responsibilities that I have in the situation that I'm in. There are responsibilities that you have, and the responsibilities that you have in the position that you are in. Maybe not the same responsibilities, but the same goal, and that is to meet our responsibility. Whatever it is, and however we are in this life, that we are seeing the will of God for us and we are striving to do that will, he says you've got to do it. You've got to meet your responsibility to God. You have to bear the weight of your own responsibility. Each one shall bear his own load. Go over to Psalm chapter 38. In Psalm chapter 38, another psalm of David. And on this occasion, David has committed sin. And as we look at verse 3 and on, he is bearing the weight of the fact that he has not met his responsibility to God. It's easy to think that we have no responsibility to God. It's easy to begin to think that we can shirk our responsibility. And what gets in the way of our thinking that is the conscience that God has given to us. The knowledge that we have in us of when we are right with God and when we are not, and how we are pricked when we're not right with God. God has given us that conscience. So that it will block our way from Him as we try to run away from Him. Our conscience is constantly trying to draw us back. And see David's conscience working on him in Psalm chapter 38, beginning in verse 3. "There is no soundness in my flesh because of your anger, nor any health in my bones because of my sin. For my iniquities have gone over my head. Like a heavy burden, they are too heavy for me. My wounds are foul and festering because of my foolishness. I am troubled. I am bowed down greatly. I go mourning all the day long. For my loins are full of inflammation, and there is no soundness in my flesh. I am feeble and severely broken. I groan because of the turmoil of my heart." Here is David in a very bad place in his life. Things aren't going well for him. He is, to say the least, not enjoying life. Life is miserable for him. Why is that? Because he has committed sin. And his conscience is weighing him down. No doubt weighing him down emotionally. There is no joy in life anymore. But no doubt also weighing him down physically, because you cannot continue with a torn up conscience and still have the kind of health that you have when you are filled with joy in knowing that you're right with God. And so here is David, and he is in this horrible place. Ever felt that kind of thing, maybe not that severely, but you felt those pangs of conscience that have weighed you down, that have made you miserable for a season? What is the answer to that when life is miserable for you? And you say, well, what you need to do is you need to go to a psychiatrist or a psychologist and let them tell you, you know, everything's really okay. You need to just feel good about yourself. I'll tell you, that's a fool's game. To go to someone who tells you that what you have done that has put so much misery in your life, you can just continue to do that and then now just feel good about yourself. You can't do it. So what is the answer to men like David and us when we feel these kinds of feelings because we are not following God, because we have run in a path away from God, in a path away from righteousness and the responsibility that we have, the load that God has given us to carry, and we're no longer carrying it? What is the answer? It is not to try to feel good about ourselves in that kind of situation. The remedy for the misery that's caused by running from God is to return to God. Going back over there to the book of Jeremiah, Jeremiah has already talked about the fact that these people could not get away from God. They could not get away from their responsibility to God. And now in chapter 3, Jeremiah chapter 3, verse 21, he describes the misery that Israel is feeling. They're feeling that same kind of misery in their life as David was feeling. Why? Because they found themselves in the same situation that David found himself in. They're away from God. They're running from God. They're ignoring the will of God. They've violated God's will, and now that conscience is against them, and the physical pressure of that is against them. A voice was heard on the desolate height, weeping and supplications of the children of Israel. Why? For they have perverted their way. They have forgotten the Lord their God. They have traveled Tarshish, if you will. Israel as a group has gotten in a boat and they're sailing to Tarshish away from God and away from the responsibility that God has given to them. They've forgotten the Lord. And because of that, their way is perverted. Listen to what he says in verse 22. And this is the remedy. If you're feeling that pain of conscience, if you're feeling the burden of the misery that sin has brought to your life, here's the answer. Return. Return, you backsliding children, and I will heal your backsliding. Indeed, we do come to you, for you are the Lord our God. That's the answer to that. God says, here's what you need to do about your misery. You need to return to me. You need to change your path. Instead of running away from me, you need to run to me. Return, you backsliding children. He says, you do that and you'll get the healing that you're looking for, the emotional healing that turns misery into joy. That's what you're seeking. Here's how you get it. And they say at the end of that verse, we'll do that. Indeed, we'll come back to God and receive that healing because He is the one. He is the Lord. He is the one who can heal. Heard an old preacher one time talking about Matthew chapter 7 and the broad way and the narrow way. And he said there's one good thing about the broad way, and that is there is plenty of room to turn around. And that's true. You can find yourself on the broad way that leads to destruction, but that doesn't mean you have to continue there. Because you can turn around. There's plenty of room on the broad way to turn around and go down the right path that God would have you to go. We can't run from God. We can't run from our own selves. We have to run in the path that God has given to us. The third thing we cannot run away from, and that is death. Hebrews 9 and verse 27 says that it is appointed for men to die once, and after this comes the judgment. Death is an appointment for us all, unless the Lord comes. And if the Lord comes and we're still alive, then life on this earth is going to end without our physical death. But other than that, death comes. Death is an appointment that every single person must keep. There's a old Arabian folklore, a short story, retold by Somerset Maugham. And it's entitled, Death Speaks. And this is death speaking. And I want you to pay attention to this. There was a merchant in Baghdad who sent his servant to market to buy provisions. And in a little while, the servant came back, white and trembling, and said, Master, just now when I was in the marketplace, I was jostled by a woman in the crowd. And when I turned, I saw that it was death that jostled me. She looked at me and made a threatening gesture. Now lend me your horse and I will ride away from this city and avoid my fate. I will go to Samaria and there death will not find me. The merchant lent him his horse. And the servant mounted it and dug his spurs in its flank. As fast as the horse could gallop, he went. So get the picture there. Here's the servant who says to his master, I was in the marketplace in Baghdad and I saw death. And it frightened me that death was coming for me. And so I need to flee to Samaria. And so the master gave him his horse to allow him to flee to Samaria. And then it continues, then the merchant went down to the marketplace. And he saw me, that is, saw death, standing in the crowd. And he came to me and said, why did you make a threatening gesture to my servant when you saw him this morning? This is death speaking. That was not a surprising gesture, or threatening gesture, I said. It was only a start of surprise. I was astonished to see him in Baghdad, for I had an appointment with him tonight in Samaria. Do you get that? He's fleeing to Samaria to flee from death. And in fact, his appointment with death was in Samaria. What's the point of that Arabian folklore? You're not going to escape death. Death is coming. And there is nothing that you can do about that. And here's what Solomon said in Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 8. This is the English Standard Version. This time wise Solomon speaks and he says, no man has power to retain the spirit or power over the day of death. You don't have power over the day of death. Again, Hebrews 9 and verse 27 says you have an appointment with death. What Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 8 says is, that's an appointment you're going to keep. There may be a lot of appointments you can cancel in this life. Death is not one of those. You cannot cancel that appointment. You might delay it, but you cannot cancel it. Death is something that we cannot run away from. Well, if all of that is true, if we cannot run away from the Lord, if we can't run away from our responsibility to the Lord, and we can't run away from ourselves, we can't run away from death, then what's our responsibility? What do we need to do? Well, Peter said it in 2 Peter chapter 3 when he asked, what kind of people ought we to be, recognizing that we can't run away from the end of things on this earth? What manner of people ought we to be in holy conduct and in righteousness? We need to run to the Lord and not run from Him. in whatever he charges us to do. And I'm sure that Jonah had a responsibility there that was just odious to him. God had told him to do something that he just flat did not want to do. And as we look at Jonah here in a number of weeks, we'll see he probably had some pretty good reasons for not wanting to do what the Lord told him to do. But that's not the issue. The issue is that God told him something to do and he couldn't escape it. He could run to Tarshish. He could run further than Tarshish. And the Lord was going to be there. And the Lord was going to hold him accountable for what he did. And the same is true for you. You can't run away from the Lord. You can't run away from your responsibility. You can't run away from your conscience when your conscience tells you you're not what the Lord wants you to be. And you certainly can't run away from death. Listen to the Lord. Do His will. Obey His commandments. Place your faith and your trust in Him. Run in the direction that He tells you to run. And when you come to the end of this life, the fact that you can't escape death won't matter at all. You'll welcome it because that's your pathway to eternal life. Can we help you tonight to run to the Lord rather than run away from Him? Perhaps you're living a life right now that is spent running away from the Lord and your responsibility. Can we help you to run to Him? He's waiting for you with open arms. All you need to do is let us know how we can help you to find your way into the arms of the Lord. Let us know. Let us know so we can help you on your pathway to heaven. If you want to do something about your soul tonight and we can help you to do that, let us know how we can by coming forward right now while together we sing.